Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly, looking back on a high-scoring weekend around Europe and forward to the Champions League second legs. With some attractive matchups in store, who'll be getting a semi? Can teen wonder Makeda help Man United sail past Porto? And if Bolton can put three past Chelsea, what price a Liverpool comeback at the Bridge? There's shock news in France, Lyon off the top of Ligue 1, the latest from Spain with Cid and Villarreal's chances in the quarterfinals, and Italy, Roberto Smaidio with a Serie A roundup just like Mama used to make. All that plus more from the Premier League, Stephen Ireland's tattoos and more wine and tears on Tyne and Wear, and your posts and other stuff too in this Easter Monday Football Weekly. Hello everybody on board today, Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kevin. Happy Easter to you and to Barry Glendenning.
Many happy returns, James.
Thank you. And Rob Smythe, chalkboard maestro, Rob Smythe.
I was wondering how many words it would take after my name for you to use the word chalkboard. And one, in fact, well done.
Right. I'd regarded the chalkboard as a kind of the rather more tortuous version of the waterboard, but you came up with something this morning that fascinated me. Involving Bolton.
Yeah. Well, it was quite interesting. Just the difference between how they played till they went 4-0 down and how they played after. And you can see it all on the Guardian football site.
All right. For anyone who doesn't have that option.
Well, basically, they were just humping it for Davis and Elmander an incredible amount to win aerial duels against Ashley Cole.
Right.
Then 4-0 down, Elmander came off and they brought on Basham. And they just started kind of playing normally and scored three goals.
Right. It's really interesting, though, because is there a lesson then there for Liverpool? Don't hump it forward and try and expose Ashley Cole.
Don't hump it down the right wing, yeah.
Right. Because where humping's concerned, Ashley Cole's got that covered, I suspect, in strictly football terms. But there you go, Liverpool, 150-1 they were on Friday to win the Champions League, all in all, but that implies pretty long odds on them even getting past Chelsea. But they warmed up with a 4-0 caning of Rovers. Chelsea, meanwhile, conceding three goals, am I right, to Bolton in 8 minutes?
Yeah, it was something like that. Certainly, they were quick fire goals.
Well, with Torres on the kind of form that he is this tie really dead? Kevin?
Yes. Oh. it pains me to say it because I'm going there. I'm getting a flight the following morning at dawn to Porto.
Right.
But I go to Stamford Bridge not expecting any great stimulus. Can you imagine Gus Hiddink being incapable of managing this game to ensure his team don't lose 3-0 or 3-1?
Hmm.
I think Chelsea are well capable of taking the sting out of this match.
Well, I'm sure they are capable of doing that. But it's a funny old game, Barry Glendinning.
It is a funny old game. You're just frantic for somebody to say that Liverpool have a chance of turning this around.
Right.
And I think apart from the most optimistic of Liverpool supporters, right, you will struggle to find anyone.
All right, then.
It is possible, but incredibly unlikely.
All right, okay. Well, Hagen 88 says this tie isn't dead. Number nine, also talking up the chance of it. But there you go. Obviously, they fall into that optimistic Liverpool fan category. Well, I tell you what, then Chelsea then got the win over Bolton, but it was a bit of a... It was actually probably a very useful wake-up call, as I think someone's commented ahead of this game, the dangers of complacency. And as we said, Liverpool... Oh, sorry, Rob.
No, I was going to say, what I think is interesting about that game is how does Benitez play it? I suspect his vanity and love of the European Cup means he'll pick his best team. But frankly, if I were a Liverpool fan, I wouldn't put out a reserve team, but I certainly wouldn't. If Gerrard is struggling a bit, I wouldn't bother risking him. I'd be tempted to give Torres the day off.
So... Gerrard basically only being able to face one game a week, you would say this one's gone, we've got to concentrate on the Premier League where we're just 1 point behind.
At the best of times, I think the Premier League is their priority, but when you're 3-1 down, is it really any point?
Right.
Do you think he might start with Gerrard and Torres and take them off if things just are still going wrong for them?
Yeah, he's certainly done that in the past. That said, they don't have a weekend game, so I suppose in that respect, he can play. But even then, it all adds up. I think he will do that, yeah.
They don't have a weekend game because there's FA Cup semi-finals next weekend.
Right. Yes.
Well, there you go. There's your answer. You can play Gerrard anyway.
Yeah, but it all mounts up, doesn't it?
If only we edited bits out of this pod, that would probably go, Rob. But there you go. Now, I'll tell you what. Meantime, in the Premier League, still tighter than tight there at the top. We're just a 1 point between Man United and Liverpool and Chelsea, 4 points off the lead. Man United, meanwhile, yet another wonder strike from that fellow Federico Kiko Marqueta. Presumably he's going to start against Porto, is he?
I have no idea.
Right.
But was it even a wonder strike or did it just bounce off him and go in?
Well, it did rather, yeah.
Oh, sorry, were you being facetious?
No. I mean, nobody really knows if he meant it because the replays aren't that clear. He does move gently towards the ball.
Well, I would say any striker who gets a touch on the ball in front of goal means to put it in the goal.
What would you say if Bobby Zamora had scored it?
Say there was the same thing. No, I would call it a lucky bounce. I mean, it was serendipitous.
But wouldn't you say
serendipitous? Yeah, there you go.
If he's the kind of guy that these things happen to, what a career he's got ahead of him.
Exactly. It is, yeah. Exactly, Kevin. And, well, there you go. It was a bit rough on Sunderland, though, Barry, as I'm sure you...
Yes, it was a bit. They did well, better than I expected, but Manchester United managed to win the game but come away probably quite disheartened at what heavy weather they made of it. And, you know, they're still very much in a wobble, I think.
Well, they do seem to be. Having said that, all the comments seems to be the fact that when you win games like this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, mark of true champions and that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think also just a question of the lack of vitality about United these days. They've really sat back and gave Porto loads of room in the first game. If they do that on Wednesday, they will be knocked out. So they're going to have to rouse themselves and really press Porto hard and keep the pace high.
I think he'll go for a mobile midfield, certainly. I wouldn't be surprised if Carrick was left out. I think he might go for the midfield that played against Chelsea, which was Park, Giggs and Fletcher in the middle and Ronaldo. And as you say, really harry them. Mm. Because they have to do that. They gave him an absurd amount of room. I'm sure Scholes won't play for that reason.
I think Porto, I mean, the Man U scouting report can't have been brilliant. I think Porto were far, far better than Manchester United believed they were going to be.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. Certainly better than the crowd believed. I think they just turned up for a 7-0 win.
But having said that, Sunderland scored one, could have scored another. They had one shot off the post on the weekend. So it does seem that goals are there for the taking against United at the moment.
Absolutely, they're still struggling badly. I don't know if Ferdinand will be fit on Wednesday, but if he is, that would, you would suspect, make a big difference. They need him badly.
You have to think they've been planning for him to be fit, don't
you? Absolutely.
He had this thing when he played for England, he's not played since. I mean, surely he must be close to being ready.
You would think so.
Mm. Do you know that the win over Inter was United, you probably do know this, was United's only victory in the last six matches in the Champions League?
Really? But funnily enough, that's where the problem started, because they were jittery and lucky that night, as opposed to away to Inter, where they played really well, and they haven't recovered. They played Liverpool 4 days later, I think, got hammered, and have been lumbering around like drunks ever since.
What does your gut tell you, Rob?
I think, I did some research on this, actually. Right. You have a 1 in 7 chance of going through if you draw the first leg 2-2 at home in the European Cup. I'd say maybe United have a slightly better chance than that, but I think if Ferdinand plays, they might go through. If he doesn't, I think they could take a decent hiding.
Mm. Knowing no English side, etc., etc., ever scored.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that's so relevant, really.
Mm. Okay.
But anyway, I think they'll struggle personally.
Kevin?
You can only go on the evidence of your eyes. Porto on top form, Man U in a bit of a slump. I think they've got a job in their hands to turn that around. I think the odds must favour Porto.
Barry?
I think Porto will go through.
Interesting. Could be the end of the quintuple dream then. Now, Templeton the Rat says, I like finding out what Potter's bet on and if they had a winning bet. That is part of the football experience. My tip for the weekend, says Templeton the Rat, Wigan 1, Arsenal 0. Well, he was 50% right, no? Because Wigan did score a goal against Arsenal. But a storming performance from the injury-racked Gunners side.
Well, it was a kind of a peculiar 4-1, though. I believe Wigan were the better side for the first hour. Gibbs could have been sent off. But then once Arsenal got going, they just tore them apart.
Mm.
They're in a great run, and they're benefiting from the fact that all the attention is on Man United, Liverpool and Chelsea, and they're just going about their business, building up some really nice momentum. Mm.
I see Marcus Senna's out for Villarreal too, so I know they won Panathinaikos the last round, but I think different thing going to Arsenal.
Yeah, I can't see.
Because they're already missing that other midfielder, aren't they?
Cazorla.
Huge. The heart has been very much ripped out of their side.
So speaks Spanish expert Barry Glenn.
Yes. Yeah. It's been ripped out of their body and now it's being held up, pumping by Arsene Wenger, like your man shouting Muller Ram in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
I guess all the things, though,
I can't believe you'd even mention that film.
Why?
I prefer to pretend it never happened. I mean, it was a...
It's better than the last one.
No, I wouldn't agree with that at all. At all. Off on a tangent alert, listeners, but I would not, and nor I suspect would any right-thinking listener agree.
No, I agree that Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was very, very poor, but it is better than Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I would say it isn't, because, first of all, it's Spielberg trying to do comedy, which really, really should never happen. And secondly, because, I mean... Without even going into all the realms of Hollywood physics, for example, falling out of a plane on an inflatable raft and then tobogganing down the mountain and that. No, beyond all of that, there is a clear formula to what they did in Indiana Jones, which you either like or you didn't like. And in the other three films, they stuck by that formula. They played that tune to winning effect. In Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, they completely stripped that out. They changed from the font of the titles. to every other element of it. There was no Indiana Jones at university. There was none of that. There was no, help me out here, Kevin, all the other things that they usually have, which they don't have, none of that. They didn't
have the very annoying little sidekick short round.
Not half as annoying as that woman was. What have I got here? Are you waving a note at me, Rob? Where do you stand?
I'm not doing anything.
Time to get off the fence,
I'm just
Smythe.
Enjoying Film Weekly.
Indiana I'll tell Jones. You what I saw a couple of weeks ago, while we're off on this tangent, yes. Which to my mind is far more interesting than Champions League, is the original notes or the minutes, a transcript of the recording of Lucas, Spielberg, and the other guy whose name I can never remember having their spitball session pre Raiders of the Lost Ark,
yeah.
Where they're coming up for, you know, what kind of character Indiana Jones would be and all that. It's really good. I'll email it to you.
And what would go on, throw some nugget from that.
Well, there is. I can't remember any nuggets particularly, right. Which is where my anecdote falls down.
But right, but what was interesting?
It was fascinating to see how they came about dreaming up the character of Indiana Jones. Right. And Spielberg comes up with some great ideas, just everything from the bullwhip to the scar on his chin to the hat and to his jaw.
That's another thing they don't do in episode 2. There are no silhouette with the man of hat or adjusting hat on head, which is. That's what you want. If you go to a French restaurant, you want French food, I would say. If you don't like French food, don't go there. But don't go in and get served a pizza or whatever and be happy with it. That's my feeling very much on Temple of Doom.
Okay.
If you could, instead of emailing it to me, or by all means email it to me, but post that on the... Maybe the listeners would enjoy that. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, listen. Sorry about that, listeners. On we go, then. right, okay. And Aston Villa and Everton. That draw... spectacular and hugely entertaining that was. Does that mean that Arsenal now are secure of their top four position?
Well, the Magus more or less said that. I think Aston Villa, I've been banging on about it, but ever since Martin Larsson got injured in December, they lose goals, can't win games. The squad was too small. It wasn't strengthened apart from Emil Heskey arriving in January. And now the suspicion is that if Villa don't get into the Champions League, there won't be that much money to spend in the summer either.
Really?
Well, it's been said in one of the Sunday papers. I don't know how true it is. But
I thought Randy Lerner was meant to be this kind of munificent...
But he's not like worth billions and billions and billions. I don't think he can spend without giving it any thought.
Ooh.
Is it just me or... was James Milner's free kick yesterday absolutely sensational? I don't think he's sort of getting due credit, maybe because he scored when Villa were behind, but I thought it was the equal, if not nearly superior, to the famous one by Roberto Carlos.
The only one by Roberto Carlos.
Yes, in 300 attempts.
Yeah, which he kept on trying to recreate. Yeah.
And while we're on the subject,
yes.
James Milner, he's still on... the England under 21s, I believe. Is he 21, 22?
Oh, I think he's more than that.
28,
now.
I think.
But he looks about 45 now. Right. He's one of those players who looks sort of a reverse Dorian Gray, who looks old before him and David Nugent both look like old, really old men, even right. though they're not.
He's a big chap, that there is no doubt. Okay, well, there you go. We'll talk more about what kind of opposition Villarreal will afford at the Emirates in a second or two when we dial up Dr. Sid in Spain. Welcome back, listeners. You join us at an interesting juncture of Football Weekly because Sid has just said if you want to ask about AC/DC, you'll have to talk to Sean. I don't know what you mean by that, Sid.
Well, the thing is, I might have got the wrong band, but I think I'm right in saying that the only thing that gets Sean's young child to sleep is AC/DC, which I don't know if that's a ringing endorsement or not of their musical talent.
Is that not Paul Doyle's family you're getting confused with?
No, Sean is a big fan of Monster Rifola, definitely.
Really?
And I'm going to see AC/DC tomorrow night in the O2 Arena, so I could bring Ingle Jr. in one of those little papoose things.
Yes.
And she'd get a good
blend
night's
right
sleep
in with the crowd,
up at the front in the mosh pit, which is where I'll be.
Well, Barry, for those who've about to rock.
That's a very good idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there you go. Sid.
Yes.
Villarreal.
Yeah.
Arsenal have
rubbish.
Got big injury problems because you're saying that Cliche may be back, but who is it? Jura went off, Kevin, at the weekend?
Yes, they had Mikel Silvestre came on there. Mm. But yeah, quite a nasty injury for Jura. They've already lost Gallas, of course, so they're now down to Touré and Silvestre, and you know, they're rummaging around for a centre-back.
And that fellow Gibbs didn't look much cop at the weekend.
No, but luckily he's got the referee in his side.
Right, okay, well, it all sets up interestingly for this clash with Villarreal, who of course do have their own injury problems. Barry's already covered the fact that their beating heart has been ripped out and placed on a stake by Arsene Wenger. The beating heart of their midfield, I should say. Confusion, yes. Barry's already covered the fact that their two key midfielders are out there, Sid.
Oh, that was from me, was it? I'm sorry, yeah. I hadn't realised that Arsene Wenger was one who ripped out their beating heart and put it on a plate. But yeah, Marcus Senna limped off injured at the weekend. He's out. Obviously, you've also got the injury to Santi Cazorla from a couple of weeks ago. He's out. And I think that means that what chance Villarreal had, to be honest, I think has now disappeared.
Really?
I mean, I think they, really. Sorry, I'm
astonished. It wasn't that bad a result for them in the first league. Arsenal, do you know, have only scored 3 goals in their last 6 Champions League matches. But of course, a lot of those were played without some of the big guns that are now back for them.
Yeah, I think there's some other factors, though. I mean, you say Arsenal are in that position, but Villarreal have got. They're very, very much up against it. I mean, after the game, they're all saying, well, we beat Panathinaikos and we went away there and beat them having drawn 1-1 at home, so we can do it again to Arsenal. But I think that overlooks the fact that the last time they got to the semi-final, they based it on scoring away goals, not on winning away. They have struggled to score and win games away from home. They've only won 1 away in 10 in the league now, Villarreal. And I think without Senna, without Santi Cazorla, I don't think they're going to be able to control the game at Highbury. And I think they found out that Arsenal play the game too quickly for them. I think they're out, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, I'd love to be wrong because I quite enjoy Spanish sides getting as far as possible, but I don't think they've got a chance.
All right.
Yeah, I think that generally speaking, if Arsenal can get enough players back, a lot of them have missed parts of the season, like Walcott are coming back now. They're a real danger in these closing weeks of the campaign.
Also, I don't know if I'm right in saying this. I hope so, because obviously it's an English fact, so I might have got it wrong. But I believe I'm right in saying that Arsenal have not conceded in the last 7 home games.
They've not conceded all season in the Champions League at home.
All season in the Champions League, but in their last 7 home games in all competitions. I think since the turn of the year, I think I'm right in saying that they've only conceded 2 goals.
Well, you're a mine of information, aren't you, Sid? I think you're spot on with that. Arshavin won't, of course, be playing in this game, and he has been a standout feature of the Arsenal side of late. But still, the consensus very much is that the Gunners will go sailing through there. Now, David Villa, was all over Friday's newspapers with this £45 million, is it, pound offer from Chelsea. What's the reaction on the Spanish end to that?
Well, the thing about Villa is that while Villa is a brilliant player, he has very, very little charisma in the media. And as always, he's flat-batted this, as he always does. He said, look, I've got a 6-year contract. As far as I'm concerned, I'm going to see out that 6-year contract. I will be staying at Valencia until such a time as Valencia say they don't want me. Now, of course, there's the key. Valencia don't want him. Well, they do want him, obviously, but they don't want him because they'd rather have the money. Now, when we get to a situation in which Villa is basically forced to walk away, then I think what we'll find is that he would rather stay in Spain. But, of course, Valencia will be absolutely delighted to have any major interest from Chelsea because it will force the price up for both Real Madrid and Barcelona. And what Valencia don't want is to be left with a situation in which Villa says, I'm only going to Spain, that means there's only 2 clubs available. Let's say, for argument's sake, one of Madrid or Barcelona doesn't push very hard. And Valencia are forced to take a small fee for him. So they'll be really, really pleased that Chelsea are prepared to really push the boat out for him.
Excellent. Well, that's good news for them. Now, Barcelona, meanwhile, are at Bayern Munich, and they ploughed ahead in the league over the weekend, still 6 points clear of Real Madrid. The league and their passage to the semi-finals both look pretty much a done deal, no?
Well, I'm not sure about the league, to be honest with you. I think, you know, the thing that they just can't throw Real Madrid off, and it's quite incredible that they can't throw Real Madrid off, because Madrid really in truth are almost playing a different sport to Barcelona. I mean, it's not good, it's not pretty, but they're getting results. And in that sense, I think it would be churlish to say that they're a poor side, although sometimes it's tempting to say that. You know, with Juan de Ramos, they've only lost 1 game in the league, only drawn 1. I think it's 14 victories in the last 15 matches for Real Madrid. Again, they were poor this weekend, but again they won, and they do have an ability to protect themselves because they have a very, very good defence, and to score goals because obviously they've got players who are going to get it. The one thing I'm curious about, so when you look back at this run, Real Madrid have always been in the lead. They've always had the game where they've wanted it, which means they can play on the break and pick teams off. They haven't really had to fight back in difficult circumstances. They haven't had an uphill task yet, because it seems that, you know, they play a poor game, the other side will be playing poorly as well, or there'll be 1 or 2 chances here and there, and Madrid will get the first one, and that sets them on their way. It'll be really interesting to see how they react when they actually have a really difficult game ahead of them.
Mm, interesting. But the Champions League, no question about that one, 4-0, etc. done it.
Yeah, well, Barcelona is saying that there's a question about it. I mean, Guardiola all season has tried very, very hard to keep the euphoria in check, which is difficult with the Catalan press jumping up and down all the time, trying to look for new words for bloody brilliant. And I think that you know, he's been trying very hard to say, look, we're not through. But, of course, the belief is that they are through.
Mm. Averaging 3.1 goals per game in the Champions League, I noticed, Barcelona. Isn't that interesting? Other interesting Champions League stats. No player has attempted more shots on goal than Cristiano Ronaldo, 48, I think. But he's only scored
once. I think attempted is the word, isn't it? You could get me on the pitch and I'd attempt shots every time I got the ball, if you like.
Exactly. How many has he scored?
Cristiano Ronaldo or me?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
I don't think he's scored many more than you. Say.
No,
about
indeed.
Two,
one.
Is it?
One. I think one.
Yeah, he's quite a lot more handsome, isn't he?
I don't know. He's not, I have to say, my type. But we could go off on another tangent here. But he's not. Bayern Munich, they
Where
did.
I am, is that what you mean?
Sid, you're a personable chap. And that, I think personality is very important.
It's what's on the inside that counts.
The phrase that we're looking for after saying personality won't count, that's going to have to be one motherfucking charming pig, isn't it?
Right, okay then. Well, Sid, thank you very much for that input. And we'll be speaking to you soon, hey?
Yeah, I hope so on Thursday.
All right, nice one. Cheerio. Bayern, I was almost mentioned there, beat Frankfurt 4-0 on Saturday. There you go. And they moved into kind of joint second place. They're ahead of Hamburg, former leaders, Martin Jol and that, who perhaps were a bit knackered after their UEFA Cup excitement against Man City last week. They had a 1-0 defeat against Stuttgart. Barry Gomes scoring. Anyway, so top of German table for those who are interested. Barry, Wolfsburg, 54 points. Then Bayern and Hamburg on 51, so still pretty tight. And then Hertha Berlin are down on 49. Hoffenheim, by the way, are now down in sixth. Ooh. Oh, in France, how about this? Now, someone with a statistical frame of mind will tell us exactly, but at this point of the season, this must be the first time in, 7 years that Lyon haven't been occupying top spot sur le French table. They have dropped off thanks to a 2-2 draw with Monaco, while Marseille have claimed first place with a 4-1 win over Grenoble. Goals flying in all over Europe. 40 in the Premier League, and even in France they were, you know, there were one or two boots, as I believe they're called there. Yes, there you go. So all very exciting. Tyrone Mears, Marseille.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
He famously sneaked out a toilet window at Derby County or something, didn't he, to go and run away and join Marseille. Like a little kid running off to join the circus.
Right.
And Paul Jules, who was manager at the time, was not happy bunny.
One day he'll return, you know, full of Marseille riches, and he'll become some celebrated local, and everyone will look up to him. The boy who ran away to Marseille.
Yes.
Hmm.
A fable for our times.
It's a lovely story, that. Now, in Italy, continuing our continental roundup, let's see. Lots of goals there as well. Inter drew. They were 2-0 up against Palermo. Palermo came roaring back, Andrew, 2-2. But it doesn't matter because they are still locked on for the title. They're now 10 points clear after Juventus in the Saturday night game. Rob Smythe lost to team of the moment, Genoa, 3-2.
Yeah, I believe it was a cracker, wasn't it? 3-2, late winner, red cards. Genoa go fourth for the first time since 91, actually.
No, they've been fourth for ages. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's but great. I think at this time, they finished
fourth in 91, I checked.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
You were telling me they're kind of neutral's favourites. They play really great football. Even Mourinho likes them, which is
they're the only people that Mourinho's found time to give a compliment to is Gasperini, the Genoa manager.
And they have a couple of players from Spain, Melito, who I think scored.
Well, he's Argentine, actually.
Yeah, but he came from Spain.
Yeah, that's true. He did from Saragossa.
And Thiago Motta, who's Brazilian, but came from Barcelona.
That's true.
Oh, no, he came from Atletico.
No, he came from Barcelona.
Okay.
Yeah. Who let him go for buttons, or possibly even for free, because he'd had two knee operations, and they went, well, I don't fancy this much. But he's only 26. He's brilliant, and he scored twice against Juventus, and it looks like he might be on for a big money move to an even bigger club.
James, I saw it the weekend and Milan 1-1 at Chievo. Yeah. They're in danger of coming second. That's quite high for them. Because, but generally speaking, they don't seem to try too hard in Serie A for quite some time.
Only 2 points. Well, it's interesting. Juventus have really gone off the boil ever since they went out of the Champions League to Chelsea. And you thought at that point, well, they'll concentrate now in the league now and really reel in Inter. And it hasn't happened that way at all. They've had a lot of injuries, to be fair, to poor old Claudio or Ranieri. But yes, they were very upset as well about the refereeing. But I think it's fair to say that the refereeing errors fell on both teams on Saturday night in what was a terrific match. And it would be great to see Genoa in the Champions League because I mean, they are the oldest club in Italy. They had a really rough time of it, their fans, in the last decade.
Who were they founded by?
They were founded by Dr. Spenceley, as you know, Rob Smythe.
Dr. James Richard Spenceley.
Indeed so, indeed so. Founder also of the Scout movement in Italy, interestingly enough. As you say...
Have you ever go scouting for boys, James?
No, right. I never had that opportunity. I always thought the Cubs was a very noble institution, but... sadly, it's not on my curriculum. Milan, as you say, just 2 points. Great shout there, Kevin, behind Juve.
I know. I mean, I guess coming second isn't brilliant, but they've been very mediocre. They seem not to take Serie A all that seriously, or maybe they don't have the squad to take it seriously in terms of winning a title.
They had a 1-0 win over Chievo.
Yeah.
Not a very inspiring one.
When was their last Serie A title, Milan?
2002.
Yeah.
I'll mention here a post from Milan Forever, who says, to James and Rob, after we were poo-pooing Ancelotti's credentials as a manager. He says, this is what Ancelotti's won since he's been at Milan. One Coppa Italia, one Serie A title, one Italian Super Cup, two Champions Leagues, one UEFA Supper Club, I think he means Super Club, and one FIFA World Cup. That's all in 5 years between 2002 and 2007. But what have you done for me lately, Carlo? Carlo Ancelotti, incidentally, after the Chievo victory on Saturday, saying, I absolutely rule out moving to Chelsea or Man City or other clubs. I'm staying here. So make of that what you will. Make of that what you will. And Allegri, the guy who the Italian press are convinced has been lined up to take over, Milan are saying, oh, well, he can go and manage Chelsea or something and warm up for the Milan job, which is a bit cheeky. Cagliari, who are the club that Allegri currently manages, are up in eighth place. So well done to them. That's not far off potentially UEFA Cup spot. We should mention, amidst all this, the phenomenal Rome derby, which pretty much rules Roma out of the top four and a place in the Champions League next season. So all sorts of problems in store for Roma. They are now 8 points off the top four. Genoa looking good then, on 57 points. Fiorentina, the only rivals, really 2 points behind. Roma losing 4-2. Then and all sorts of ill-tempered scuffles and
four players sent off. Is that right?
Is that right? Was it maybe four? Wow. And also Spalletti having a bit of a set to with the one of the Lazio directors and telling him to stick his finger where the sun don't shine. And it was and a phenomenal goal by Mauro Zarate. I don't know if you're a fan of the little Argentine ex of Birmingham City, but an absolute stonking goal. In fact, they're all quite good. All the Lazio goals were good. Adriano. That's the other thing to say since our last pod. Adriano. Has now decided that he's going to hang up his boots. He just doesn't want to know for the moment. See, I think the idea is he's going to fly back next week to Milan and discuss his contract. The idea is that they're just going to come to a mutual agreement and end his association with Inter. He just...
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
He's just not a happy bunny. And I think on his last trip back to... As you know, on his last trip back to Brazil, he just couldn't bear to go home, so he just... took off, went off the radar, went back to his kind of hometown, Villa Cruzeiro, a kind of slum area in Rio, and said, whatever the phrase would be to it all, and then appeared in a press conference and said, look, I'm not dead. There's been a lot of exaggerations about me. Adriano is not dead, but no one's going to ever stop me going home again. And I think that was the thing. He just wants to clear his head. He's 26, is he? 27, 26 maybe.
So is he going to play at home in Brazil or is he just not going to play at all?
I would imagine the likeliest thing is that once he's got his head back together, he will start again in Brazil. Although Fenerbahce, I notice, are in with an offer for him.
Right.
But there you go. Let's just hope he finds the peace of mind that has so conspicuously been absent for him of late.
It's all we all want, James, is peace of mind.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? Pod listeners. Now, got some posts here, but I'm not sure if we might have outstayed our welcome vis-a-vis part two. But we'll get the posts in now. Says Producer Ben. Hi to you, Producer Ben. Standing in on this bank holiday Monday for Producer Pete, who's off enjoying some peace of mind, I would suspect. Some posts then. A lot of discussion about pod length of late. Portland suggests that we should set up preferences on what length you want it to be and have the pod auto-edit itself to fit your needs. His needs would include editing out any sentence with the word Ronaldo in it, or Ligue 1, betting odds and reading out posts from anyone but himself. Dead Sea comes up with a... Oh, is one of people... several people coming up with Computer Games 11 suggestions for you, Barry. Yep. Leisure Suit Barry, he says. You may not be familiar with the original saucy PC game. No, Leisure Suit Larry? Okay. Keith in Brooklyn.
I shook my head there, which is not great for an aural medium, but no, I'm not familiar with it.
I'm moving on then. Keith in Brooklyn says no Video Game 11 would be complete without Massimo Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft
Very
Auto.
Good.
Yeah. V. Sinical, how about Norwich star L. Croft? Because, you know, that's like Lara Croft. All right.
I did see one post. It was something to do with Grand Theft Auto and Liverpool fans.
Yeah,
it
was disappointing.
Very disappointingly predictable, but and yet quite amusing.
No. Mr. Flexington says, mighty Sivaspor have been sat atop the Turkish league for months now and look like they could really be the first team outside the Big Four in Turkey to ever win the league. When are they going to get the attention they deserve? And he says he can give you any information you may need, listener, if you're Sivaspor. What?
We've been giving them the attention they deserve. Sivaspor? All season.
Have we?
Yes.
When my back's been turned, or what?
No, we just haven't been giving them any attention. Galatasaray and Fenerbahce had a big Bosporus derby over the weekend. I think it was 0-0.
It was, but there was a bit of action of the, you know.
Oh, was there?
Yeah. I think it got a bit tasty.
On or off the field.
Proper naughty. I think on field, actually. Yeah. But Sivaspor, had you ever heard of them before?
No.
And they're top of the French league, the Turkish league?
I don't care.
All right then, Barry. If you do care, rantaboutfootball.com is the place to go. Hassan Kashlul, hello team. What the hell is going on at Dunfermline, eh? Looking forward to all your thoughts. Kevin.
What a splendid question that is. I know the chairman is wildly unpopular and runs the whole thing and the fans want him out. But whether that's an unusual state of affairs, I couldn't tell you. But the general feeling is he's like an autocrat who doesn't know what he's doing.
Right. Okay. Ulliger, hello to you there in Guten Tag in Vienna, who wants to know chronic or doggy style? It has to be chronic.
What?
Yes. And Hassan Kashlul is back again.
Back it up here a second. What? Doggy style?
Put my in reverse, go back and take another pop. To quote directly from the Chronic. It was a rap-based post.
Oh, young people's music.
Yeah, sorry. Well, I'm not in this case because the Chronic came out, what, 1994? Would it be?
Doggy style came out in 94.
Well, they both did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, the Chronic. I'm going with the Chronic. There are those who enjoy Doggy style. And please, Barry. Right, okay.
Can I bring you to a more edifying topic? Yes. Dunfermline, to make it clearer, are in danger of a slight danger of dropping into the third tier of Scottish football. This is a club for a good European past, the club where Jock Stein made his name and so on. So for them to fall that far would be quite extraordinary. I don't mean it's not quite going to happen, but they're in that kind of situation where it's even possible to talk about it.
Right. You're a real diesel, aren't you, Kevin? Take a while to get going, don't we?
I come in the following week's pod, I remember to say what I meant to say the previous week.
So I know that feeling. Lots of people commenting on Barry's contention that Rupert Lowe destroyed Southampton. Hassan Kachlul and Steve Grant saying that it wasn't his fault. It was more that fellow Michael Wilde. But Stiles says that they're all responsible. Now, speaking actually of Southampton, other divisions. Oh, well, let's talk about them in a second or two when we return in part three. It's a big Easter Monday bank holiday of football in the Championship and League One and League Two, I believe, even. Let's see. Charlton would be relegated today if they lose at Coventry and either Nottingham Forest avoid defeat or Norwich win. How about that then? We can't really talk too much about the Championship, can we? Because they're all playing today. But you want to talk about QPR, I believe, Barry?
Well, it's just Flavio Briatore has sacked another manager at QPR. Paolo Sousa got the bullet last week after 26 games in charge. Which was he's the sixth manager, I think. Ian Dowie, John Gregory, Mick Hartford, and Luigi Di Canio. Dowie went after 15 games, Gregory after 5, Hartford after 5, and Di Canio after 35. So Gareth Ainsworth is back in his almost permanent role as caretaker manager.
There was a suggestion that Briatore phoned Sousa from Tenerife to tell him which substitutions to make.
I mean, was he playing during the game?
Was he playing the game in his head or something? I don't understand how it works. That's an alleged story, anyway.
Mm.
I read it was in Malaysia. It could have been during the Malaysian Grand Prix or something. I don't know, but he's renowned for apparently meddling in team affairs, and I think Darren Ferguson is now being and Dennis Wise are being linked with the job, and as is Paul Ince. So. I don't know. It seems like a bit of a poison chalice.
Your voice is don't unpack. for those.
Isn't Darren Ferguson coming along quite nicely as a manager, and therefore this would be the last place on earth to go to?
Yeah, well, you would imagine his father would advise him against making a decision like that. He's doing quite a good job at Peterborough, very good job at Peterborough. Mm-hmm. But looking up the list of managers Briatore has had in charge of QPR, they are slightly more handsome than the list of women that Flavio has been associated with. Naomi Campbell, Adriana Volpe, Emma Hemming, Heidi Klum and Elisabetta Gregoracci, the Wonderbra model.
Right. Is he still with Elisabetta Gregoracci?
He's married to her.
Oh, okay. And she's really, really young, clearly.
Oh, yes.
There was a fascinating article, an interview with the mayor of the town she comes from, saying how delighted he was that her being with old fellow Briatore has really put his town on the map. And she's regarded as a bit of a local hero for finally doing something for whatever town that was.
Interesting lady. But I'm not sure what it is about the multi-millionaire Flavio Briatore that attracts all these women.
Personalities we were discussing before.
And those lovely fashionable blue-tinted spectacles you wear.
Indeed. Now, Luton Town could go down today, is that right? If they fail to beat Chesterfield and Grimsby win at Notts County?
Yeah, they are in danger of going down today. We have a person in the office who knows who used to be on the board.
Yes, indeed. She's joined us before on the pod. My word.
So my thoughts are with Yvonne.
Right, indeed. Freshly crowned winners of the Johnston.
Well, I think that made the whole life worthwhile, probably, if not the season.
I don't think she showed up for about 3 days after that.
And quite right, too.
Now, returning then to the Premier League, Kevin, you come fresh from Stoke's remarkable 1-1 draw with Newcastle. I noticed that Borough were the only one of the bottom eight to win this weekend, and it was a huge win for them thus.
Yeah, I mean, you hope it was more than just a kind of death rattle. They've been so terrible for so long. To find them kind of taking the lead, conceding equaliser and coming back was unsuspected of them. I must say, by the way, speaking of Stoke, I mean, I had a great time there on Saturday, and the atmosphere is brilliant. But I also think they play the game really well, Stoke. I mean, that you can see how well organised they are to get the ball wide and get it there early before there's any cover. And they were helped hugely by Alan Shearer's master plan, whereby he played 3-5-2 in a homage to 1996 and all that, which meant they had one guy in each flank, one of whom was Damien Duff, who played quite well when he had the ball but doesn't have the legs. Another one was Ryan Taylor. So Stoke had the freedom of the park. They should have won the game maybe 3-1 or 4-1, but Newcastle, with that fantastic header, got a draw. They didn't really merit.
Well, they are now tied on 30 points with Borough in third last and second last place. 2 points away from safety, a position currently enjoyed by Sunderland, their northeast neighbours. Hull are going to be playing Sunderland next. We talked about Sunderland's game with Man United earlier on. And Hull continue to fall, although they remain 4 points off the drop. Has this affected our view of who's going down this weekend?
I've always had a feeling, and I don't know why, that Middlesbrough will stay up, and I'm absolutely certain they will now.
Just 2 points off safety now?
Yeah, I just think, I don't know, they just have so much more quality than the teams around them, and I think if they get confidence from this win, I think so. I think they have some really good players. Downing, Alia, Tinshai is an outstanding player.
Yeah. Isn't it a question of defence? So they lose goals at an extraordinary rate, don't they?
Do they, though? I thought
four last week. Was it four?
Yeah, but generally. No,
I mean, in this key period.
Yeah, true. But I'd have to look that up.
Remember saying earlier in the season, and obviously it was a silly thing to say, but just in light of Rob's comments there a second ago, that I thought there was a really good team struggling to get out of that current Middlesbrough side, right. But they're still struggling badly. So I was probably wrong.
Well, I tell you what, the other interesting prediction you made was concerned Tottenham and their status vis-a-vis the top half and the bottom half at the end of the season. They're up to eighth this week.
Ninth. Oh, is it ninth? Fine, yes.
All right, then. But they're not far off a European place.
Yeah, but I mean,
which would be handy.
Why? They don't want the European place. They had a European place this year and they tanked it and sort of lost on purpose. So
right.
Why do these teams make a pretense of wanting to qualify for Europe when they clearly have no interest in being in or winning the competition?
Well, I think it's a fair point you make, but I think that often at the start of the season they have happy thoughts of having ambitions on more than one field, but when things get really desperate, as indeed they were for Spurs earlier this season, they might think it's time to cut their losses.
Well, isn't that the case, or is it a case that managers are on bonuses for qualifying for Europe or something, so they suddenly start seeing pound signs and make a big push towards the end of the season?
Yes, it's also a case that in practice they want to be in the final, but they can't be bothered for the last 16. You know, I think
think they'd be happy to go to the last four. You know, Steve McLaren was thrilled to get to the FA Cup final with Middlesbrough
and got the England job as a consequence.
Yeah,
really.
Indeed. Yeah.
Well, there's
Big props to Steve McLaren, who's currently second in Riva Dici in Holland.
Yep. Good. Excellent. That's a foreign league that you are interested in.
Yeah.
All right, good one. Vis-a-vis seventh, which if Arsenal, Chelsea or Man United win the FA Cup will mean a place in the nascent Europa League, which is really different to the old UEFA Cup. It's a London three-way derby. West Ham on 44 points, Fulham 43, Tottenham on 41. Fulham moving up there with their second away win of the season. It came, guess what, at Man City. Result predicted here on Football Weekly only last week. By
one thing about Fulham, we talk a lot about tiredness,
yeah.
And yet they never change the team. The team yesterday had played the previous three games, and they don't look tired. They look fresh. They were outstanding yesterday. It's kind of interesting. I don't know what Hodgson gives them. But
how long more is Mark Hughes going to be at City?
Well, indeed, there was a lot of pressure.
Will he be there this time next week? I think
he will. No, don't you think they'll stay till the end of the season?
I think if they get beaten on Thursday, he'll be out. Sorry, I just should mention that top Guardian feature writer, Simon Hattenston, is across the hall mooning us. He's now buckling his trousers back up.
Right. Well,
on a bank holiday, we always do this.
In nearer orbit, mooning's always a bit of a risk, a hazard. But anyway, listen, the Fulham-Man City game, or the Man City-Fulham game, interesting to see Ched Evans being brought on before Robinho from the substitutes bench, and Mark Hughes saying that Robinho needed a bit of a rest. A man who turns up for internationals, as someone's pointed out, sending out for 40 condoms, displays a certain level of stamina. Do you think that's all it was with Robinho? Need to rest?
The rumour also was that Hughes wasn't allowed to drop him. He's now proved that's not the case. He can leave him on the bench. But
right.
It's one of these horrible things. You think, oh, Mark Hughes, he's done well before, and now he's got a big club with money and he can go places. And I think I was informed by Sky TV this morning they're 11 points worse off than they were this time last season.
My word.
It's very hard to champion that and say he's done well. I mean, it's even with all the internal politics and so on, you think the squad there should be getting better results.
And he's bought players as well. I mean, not just those that have been foisted on him. He's gone out and got people like Kompany and De Jong.
That's the thing. First half of the season, they were very open, and teams don't normally play like that. But now he has the two holding midfielders he wanted, Kompany and De Jong, and they're still struggling. And I don't think he'll go this week, but I think I'd be surprised if he was there to start next season.
Right. Interesting. Personally. Interesting. Do you want to talk about Stephen Ireland's tattoos, Ben?
Not especially. I just noticed them yesterday for the first time.
They're amazing. I'm glad you pointed out
because I showed them to you this morning, and you were, whoa. I think if you Google Stephen Ireland and tattoos, you'll see them. But it's basically a big pair of angel's wings on his back. But they
like
take
the ones his grandmothers have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or else he wants to be a Hawkman from Flash Gordon.
Right.
It's that kind of thing. But apart from the fact that it must have been incredibly painful to get done, what was he thinking?
He's an interesting character, isn't he? With the,
we were saying, yes, we don't think he's the full shilling.
Well, there you go. Man City, of course, have a big game against Hamburg coming up in the UEFA Cup later in the week. 3-1 away. It was
Hamburg. They lost 3-1 away, yes. Yep.
Any chance of them turning that around, Kevin?
No.
Oh. Excellent. Right, well, for more coverage on Man City's upcoming UEFA Cup clash and indeed all the big stories in football, log on to guardian.co.uk, where you'll also find plenty of coverage of Wednesday's 20th anniversary of the Hillsborough tragedy. Some very interesting articles there. We'll be back with Football Weekly Extra on Thursday, so hopefully you'll be joining us for that. In the meantime, from all of us here, it's goodbye.